Hey, Tenderfoot listeners. I'm Liam Luxon, host of Status Untraced, a new podcast brought to you from the team behind Up and Vanished. It follows my investigation into the disappearance of Justin Alexander, a survivalist and world traveler whose life seemed like it was torn from the pages of an adventure novel. While some of Justin's friends and family believe he may have been murdered, it's not clear what actually happened. And a message he left behind just days before he vanished makes everything about his disappearance just strange. Check out this clip featuring one of Justin's friends and their recollection of their final conversation with him.
It was one thing that kind of made me feel weird about whenever he'd talk about his plans for India. And the more I've thought about it, especially over the years, it almost seemed like he was preparing for something because he wanted to be famous. He made that openly clear, like that was his end goal.
When you hear the message Justin left behind, when you hear about the remote and dangerous area where he went missing, when you learn about how the suspects and the police's efforts in this case all quietly started to fade away, you won't be able to stop wondering what happened. From Tenderfoot TV, Status Untraced is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts or subscribe to Tenderfoot Plus to binge the entire season ad-free. Learn more at tenderfootplus.com.
The following episode took place between May 2018 and May 2019.
The cover of the journal reads, "Dream Big" in large type. It was found in Chris Botts' truck and written in the last months of his life. From an undated entry on page 3. He writes, "I have an amazing fiancé who is sweet and tender and rough and stern. Kind of sounds like me, ha. Huh? If I sit and actually think about my life, I'm in awe at how lucky I am. Maybe I should do that more. I'm excited about where my art is going." 6 pages later, he writes, "It's been 2 months. Naturally, depression set in without me knowing it. I started taking my 5-HTP again, which has helped. I've also started microdosing with LSD. This has been interesting, to say the least." 3 pages later, "This triangle has been getting the best of me in recent days. And honestly, my partnership may not recover from last Sunday. It's not important for it to anyway. I know I need to be careful because of my anxiety. I would like to burn no bridges, so I will proceed with caution here. And at all costs, I must keep my energy. I'm almost certain that she is a vampire or a succubus." Chapter 30, Sam Merez.
Did he say anything about Sam Merez?
His uncle?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did. We did talk about his uncle a little bit.
What'd he say?
I'm on the phone with Chance and asking him about Sam Merez, the brother of Chris Merez and the supposedly dead uncle of Chris Botts. Ever since Chris's mother, Jade, shared with me her suspicions about Sam Merez, I've been making calls to find out who Sam is and if he could have any connection to Adea's disappearance. And it turns out there's something that Chance didn't share with me when I first spoke with him.
They said his uncle was a pretty gangster dude. And I don't really know how much I want to say here, so I don't want to like get anybody in trouble if they don't deserve it, but it was kind of his assumption that his uncle killed her and his dad buried her. He said he thought they kind of tagged him with things. But Chris said, you know, he said, "My dad's he's big and he's strong and he's fucking stupid, but he's a pussy." He said, "My dad ain't got the fucking balls to kill somebody. So if anybody did it, my uncle did it. My dad's just stupid enough to get rid of the body, and he's too stupid to do it right."
Jade also mentioned, when I last called her, that Chris Spotts had said something similar to her before he left Colorado on his final road trip with Chance. He mentioned that he thought Chris and Sam Merez knew where Adea was. So this raises the question of whether there was a third person involved, because Chris Spotts made only one other call on that fateful night Adea was killed. And that was to a burner phone with a 424 Los Angeles area code. And just maybe, Chris's mother's suspicions are right, and this number does belong to Sam Merez. So I try it again.
Message or no message?
Hello?
Yeah, hello?
Shoot,
I can't hear you. It's breaking.
Hello?
Hey.
Are you a business? I'm the only one who would have this number.
I guess I was calling about Chris Spotts.
Oh, okay. That's my nephew.
And is this Sam?
Yeah, this is Sam.
I was wondering if you had some time. I'm doing a podcast on Chris and everything that happened. And I know he talked to you a bunch. I wondered if you had time to talk about him. And
oh, that's all right. He's my nephew. I hadn't seen him in 3-4 years. Something happened that should have never happened. And it doesn't fit him at all. He's not that person. He don't fight. He don't like arguing. He don't like nothing. I wish he would still be here so I could talk to him and stuff like that. But there's nothing we can do about that now that he's gone. And I wish that same thing for the other family because it was so sad. It was just horrible.
And when was the last time you actually did see him?
The last time I did see him? Jesus. Physically, probably 3-4 years ago. We kind of lost touch, but we used to talk on the phone every so often.
When was the last time you spoke to him?
When this was all going down, I spoke to him during the time, but the one time I did, when we did talk, I asked him, because during that time I was kind of confused about everything, and he wasn't making any sense, and I was trying to figure out what he was doing. I just asked him straight up, like, did you have anything to do with that young lady missing and anything? And he's like, no, Uncle, I promise you, I have nothing to do with that. I said, okay, man, he ain't never lied to me.
So far, nothing Sam has said is a lie or a contradiction, and he seems relatively open and upfront. We talk for a while longer, and I debate whether or not now is the best time to tell him what I know.
What do you think happened?
Well, I think they got in a lover's quarrel, and they got in an argument, and I guess she was kind of small, I assume. I remember hearing how small she was. I guess the cause of death was something to the head, correct?
Right.
Yeah, so maybe he hit her in the head, tried to block her, I don't know. My wife was like close to him and tried to put everything together and how it happened. That's one thing I could think of. They had to be something protecting himself maybe or protecting each other, or maybe they just went too violent, something like that. Do you also stories about other things too, about police corruption and civil lawsuits and anything like that?
I think any story that strikes me as compelling is worth telling. What are you thinking?
I have a story of my own that happened in 2015 where I was assaulted, me and my wife, by the Los Angeles Police Department.
He tells me more details about the case, then asks for my address.
I could come down there if you'd want to send me an address or something, and I can meet you or talk to you about it and discuss whatever.
Great. Then again, I can also share whatever I've kind of found so far about Chris and Adea, and then whatever you can remember from those kind of phone calls you had around that time would be super helpful.
Yeah, definitely. I'll send you the information and everything else, and then we can discuss more of that, discuss more about Chris.
Now that I know this number belongs to Sam Merez, I can prepare for my meeting with him. Then face-to-face, I can ask him specifically about his calls with Chris that night, as well as Chris's accusations. Look, I'm in right now. Hey, Jaden.
Hey, man.
I just want to let you know that I just got off a 20-minute call with Sam Mraz.
What? How'd that happen?
Well, Alex was over. I said, why don't we try that 424 number again?
No way. Our mystery 424 number? Wow. And he just answered?
Yeah, so I called. It rings like four times. We're sure it's going to voicemail. Then a voice picks up, and the voice sounds like Chris Mraz. And I said, I was actually calling about Chris Spots. There's a long pause, and then he goes, that's my nephew.
I mean, so we've tied him to minutes before that's the last call. I mean, how many times have we called that number? Amazing for trying one more time. I mean, I'll never not try one more time. That's crazy. Hey, also, I wanted to tell you, I just got the autopsy from Nevada County for Adea. So I just sent it to you. So take a look. It's pretty extensive. It's about 30 pages. There's the general autopsy report. There's the protocol and tox.
Anything significant on it that jumps out to you?
Well, I mean, we finally at least have a picture on cause of death. You know, they're saying it's blunt force trauma to the head. Not a lot of detail in terms of like narrowing down a weapon or anything like that, dealing with the decomp and stuff like that. We're not going to see that. There's also in the tox report, it's showing caffeine, Valium, and THC or marijuana. It looks like just normal dosage. Certainly none of those listed as any like relevance to cause of death.
And was she pregnant, like Angel said?
No, it's negative on that.
Is there anything else you can tell about what happened? Or
it's going to be hard to tell. I mean, one thing that's definitely stated that it was massive blunt force trauma. If you look at page 5, you're going to see that they indicated that death was within seconds. There appear to be maybe some slight defensive wounds, maybe from like an initial hit. But, you know, they are indicating blunt force trauma, death within seconds. And they're indicating skull was crushed. So obviously something that's heavy. You know.
So they write that she was wearing a brown jacket, a red hoodie with a zipper in the front, a pair of blue pants, and black knee-high boots. Was that the same stuff she wore when she left her apartment building with Chris?
So I would say with some relative certainty, yes, the video was not great, but that's generally consistent with what she was wearing.
I think I have one other question as I'm scanning through it. Okay, yeah, it says she was covered with a silver and brown plastic tarp, which was secured with a thin orange-colored rope. That just seems odd to me, as if she'd been transported in some way from somewhere else.
Yeah, it's definitely odd. I mean, seeing that is, you know, my conjecture is just that it does indicate transport. Wrapping her in that prior to burial really wouldn't make a lot of sense. So I would definitely say that we need to think about transport and how any other evidence that we have or that we can find that would kind of support that theory might bring on a little more relevance now.
Through a tip that recently came in from someone close to the team that recovered Adea's body, I saw a photo I'd hoped never to see. And it's of Adea Shabani as she was found. I won't go into the details here, or my anger at someone who could do this to another human being. But I do want to share a few things that are significant to this investigation. A tarp has been placed over her head, and it extends down to her knees. It's secured tight to her by thin twine. Because part of her legs are exposed, it's clear that the body is not wrapped for concealment, but because it's easier to transport, and so it won't soil a vehicle. And the twine is baling twine, the kind used to secure bales of hay for horses. My source said it was their belief that the twine and the tarp came from Chris Mraz's property.
Everyone loves a good family mystery, especially one with as many twists and turns as June's Journey, step into the role of June Parker and search for hidden clues to uncover the mystery of her sister's murder. Engage your observation skills to quickly uncover key pieces of information that lead to chapters of mystery, danger, and romance. Where will each new chapter take you? June's Journey is a hidden object mystery game with a captivating detective story taking you back to the glamour of the 1920s with a diverse cast of characters. Each new scene takes you further through a thrilling murder mystery story that sets the main protagonist, June Parker, on a quest to solve the murder of her sister and uncover her family's many secrets. The gameplay lets you search for hidden objects from the parlors of New York to the sidewalks of Paris. Each chapter uncovers a collection of dazzling hidden object spectacles for you to solve. Use your true crime skills. Escape to a bygone age of mystery, danger, and romance with unique features that allow you to customize your own luxurious estate island. As a player, you can relax and lose yourself in this captivating quest of mystery, murder, and romance. If you're craving a good mystery or just looking for an escape, June's Journey is definitely for you. Honestly, my favorite part of the game so far is just finding all the little hidden objects. Sometimes it really takes me a minute to spot where the clue is. With how much we travel, it's a nice escape to just sit in the airport terminal and look for clues in June's Journey. Escape reality and immerse yourself in the world of June Parker. Can you crack the case? Discover your inner detective when you download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
Hey listeners, it's Mr. Ballin here, and I'm here to tell you about my brand new podcast. It's called Mr. Ballin's Medical Mysteries. Why medical mysteries? Well, we've all been there. Turning to the internet to self-diagnose our inexplicable pains, debilitating body aches, sudden fevers, and strange rashes. Though our minds tend to spiral to worst-case scenarios, it's usually nothing. But for an unlucky few, these unsuspecting symptoms can start the clock ticking on a terrifying medical mystery. Like the unexplainable death of a retired firefighter whose body was found at home by his son, except it looked like he had been cremated. Or the time when an entire town became ill with nausea and chills, and the local doctor chalked it up to being food poisoning until people started jumping from buildings and seeing tigers on their ceilings. Each terrifying true story will be sure to keep you up at night. Follow Mr. Ballin's Medical Mysteries wherever you get your podcasts. Prime members can listen early and ad-free on Amazon Music.
Chapter 31, Chris Merez.
Should I try him again one more time right now?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, cool. Here we go.
This is Chris from... You want to leave a message, do so, and I'll get back to you. And have a blessed day.
Hey, Chris. It's Neil. Hopefully it's not too late. I'll be up for a bit. Talk soon.
No answer.
No.
Yeah, it was kind of late.
It is late. Somebody will call me tomorrow.
But if he didn't want to, talk to you, he wouldn't call you back. That call didn't.
Oh, it's him. It's him. It's him. Okay. Hello.
Hello, Reese. I was outside. I saw that you called. So what's going on?
Great, man. Yeah, no, I'm sorry to call so late.
I saw your. I listened to your. I don't even know what those were. I just listened to them.
What are your thoughts so far?
Yeah, I just saw him the other day. I just kind of, and that whole thing with Chance, I heard that one. I never even met the kid, so I don't know what he was talking about. I've never seen him in my life. I mean, you know, all I've ever heard was my son talk about, I've never met the kid, so I don't know why he was saying all this shit, because, you know, I was kind of surprised.
It's been hard to reach Chris Merez, and this may even be my last chance to speak with him. If he was involved with the Daya's disappearance, I know he's not going to just confess to me, but I can share the facts I know that make any lies or evasions that much more difficult. And one question I have is, who led the authorities to Adaya's body? Especially since I saw the picture of Adaya, because it didn't look like a boot was sticking up out of the ground. She looked pretty well concealed. So someone must have known where she was. And thanks to the tip from my new source, I've got a good idea who that someone is.
I want to check a bunch of things with you. The first one, and I hadn't known this when we spoke, is that you led the police to Adaya or told them where she was.
Who, me?
Yeah.
No, I never told him any of it like that. I just told him what happened was that my son came back. See, my son came back. I can't remember what day it was.
Chris Merez is referring to the Thursday 2 weeks after Adea disappeared, when Chris Botts, for some unknown reason, took a 17-hour drive from Colorado to his dad's house in Wheatland, stayed for less than 2 hours, and then left.
He shows up at my house. My fiancée's at the door and goes, hey, your son's here. I'm like, what? He didn't call me, tell me nothing. I was like, this is kind of fucking weird. So I said, it's okay. So I go outside, and he goes, I don't want to talk to you. And I said, I'm sitting there talking. And I said, what are you doing? So what? We got this car. What was going on? He goes, Dad, I have a gun, blah, blah, blah. And so I said, what do you got a gun for? I said, you know what? I said, you know, if they catch you with a gun, you know, this is not good. And I said, son, I said, what's going on? So he basically opened up and he told me the situation. Okay. He didn't go into detail. He just told me, hey, Dad, this is what's going on. And he didn't tell me specifically where. There was three different spots that he told me. He basically told me, hey, this is where she's at.
Why did he say three spots instead of I put her here? Why did he say three spots?
This is the deal. When he came to stay with me, you know, he goes, hey, Dad, there's these great places to go, right? And that's where he told me that we had Spenceville, and we had Campfire West, we had Hidden Falls. And he said, you know, I knew those places. So that's when he told me that. So, but he knew this area. And him and him would go hiking up there. Yeah, they got, it's called Hidden Falls. It's a beautiful place.
That beep is concealing the identity of Chris's childhood friend, whose name we changed to Brian for purposes of anonymity. Roughly 10 years ago, Chris and Brian came to live briefly with Chris Merez when he was living in a neighboring town. And by the way, just in case you missed it in his wall of words, it was Chris Merez who tipped off police to where Adea was.
That's kind of why he told me that, because I knew the places. There's only three streets. Go ahead.
What were the spots he said?
What they are is they're creeks and there's bridges. There's three in that area. There's one, two, three. And that's pretty much what he told me. If you're going to go horseback riding, or if you're going to go hiking, or if you're going to go shoot, whatever, there's three. And that's basically all he said. And I said, okay, fine. So I didn't say anything. My thing is to see him. I was just sad because I could see the remorse he had. He was very, I don't even know what to say. It was just sad, you know, to see him like that. I think he realized what he had done.
When Chris said he had a lot of remorse about it, did he say, like, why he had done it or what happened?
You know what? And I'm going to share this with you, but this is the honest God truth. He told me this when he came that Thursday, when he told me that, he goes, Dad, to remind me of my mother, and I've always wanted to kill my mother. And straight into my eyes, exactly. I'm telling you, that's word for word. And I just kind of blew it off, and I'm like, son, you go to the cop. But he did tell me that. So I'm telling you right now, he had a lot of hate for his mom. And for whatever reason, you know, Shadé is a lot like his mother. She was a person that likes drama. She was drama. That's the way his mom was.
I just want to point out how little empathy Chris Merez has for Adea, for the victim here. In fact, I don't recall him ever saying a positive word about her. I ask him about his call to Jade Spots on February 24th, when he was talking about Adea's disappearance before anyone knew she was gone.
She had said that you would, the morning after Adea disappeared, you had called her and said, hey, some stuff happened. Like the little girl, you know, don't worry about it. I'm going to take care of it.
No, I never talked to her like that. The only time I talked to her is, and I don't know if she had told you, but I guess Chris went out there right before Christmas, and he got in a huge fight with his mom and his dad, and something out of character. Well, I like called her and I asked her what's going on with Christopher, and then she told me what happened, and that was the only time I talked to her.
So just to clarify, so you didn't call Jade that morning after Adea disappeared?
No. The only person I talked to that morning was Mary. Mary called me up, because he came back to my house, picked up the shoes. And the only reason she called me up was because she tracked her credit card to that hotel. And that was the first time I ever talked to her.
Keep in mind that Chris Spotts' mother, Jade, already sent me her phone bill to prove that she spoke with Chris Morez. And they did indeed talk for 11 minutes on the afternoon in question, Saturday, February 24th at 12:20 p.m. So what Chris Morez is telling me is clearly not true.
There are a couple odd things I wanted to ask you about, and one was the day it was wrapped in a tarp and in twine that matched twine that was on your property. Maybe twine used to like tie the bales of hay or something.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. So I have, you know, horses, I buy and sell horses. You know, but the fact that they came through my own house, I said, I don't know anything about anything. And, you know, when I told them, you know, could have been, I said, I collect them, you know, because I send them back and they reuse them or whatever. If you looked at it, it's like 1,000 of them back there. I had no clue.
But how do you have gotten the twine from your property that a day was wrapped in?
Well, because he came over to my house.
Chris Morez has just basically admitted that Chris Spotts got the twine that Adea was wrapped in from his property. Now listen to the answer to this question.
Was he ever out of your sight when he was out of your property that day?
No. When he came in, and then when he got in an argument, he took off. And then they came back that morning.
And how long was he there for that? How long was he there for that night?
Oh, probably 3 or 4 hours. Yeah, probably about 3 or 4 hours until we got in the fight and then he took off. And then he came back morning, and he was only here that morning for maybe 10 minutes, not even 10 minutes. He came, got his shoes, gave me a hug, and he was gone.
If Chris was in your sight the whole time, how would he have gotten the twine from your property that today was kind of tied up in that tarp?
Like when I told the detectives, I have no clue. You know, my thing is, you know, I have 18 acres out here, you know, and, you know, the weirdest thing was they found a hole on my property, and they had the detectives and, you know, looking at this hole, but it was a squirrel that dug it up, but they thought, well, shit. And I'm thinking, oh my God, did my son do this? And it's right in the front of my property, so I'm thinking, no, there's no way, and I knew it wasn't, you know. But they had to do their job, and it was, you know, it was actually, you know, squirrel that digs, you know, the hole.
You may remember that when I first spoke with Chris Morez, he said that this hole was dug by dogs. Another time, he said it was a coyote. However, the same source who showed me the photo of Adea said that investigators believed someone had tried to dig a grave for Adea at Chris Morez's property, but they stopped when they hit rock and couldn't easily go any deeper.
They said they had dug this hole. It was kind of a body size hole, but then it hit rock.
That was actually the hole that I was talking about. You know, and that's when the other detective was sending me, because they had over there, they were digging it up and taking pictures. And they came back, there was nothing there, of course, but I mean, I'm just thinking, holy shit, you know.
They were fairly certain that it was like, you know, a hole dug for a body, because it was a big hole and then it hit rock and it didn't go deep enough.
It was probably maybe 2 feet by 1.5 feet, but it was a fresh hole. And I explained to them, I said, like at the beginning of the year, we get them, you know, maybe 2 or 3 are digging the same hole, you know. So, went in there and dug. There was nothing, of course, but I'm just saying, I'm just like, fuck. You know, I'm thinking, did my son do that? Was he trying, you know, it was just crazy.
The thing that I'm sort of trying to piece through is, she must have been there that night in the truck. Whether alive or dead, she must have been in his truck.
You know, like I told her, you know, I saw nothing. All I saw him come in, left, come back that morning, got his shoes, that was it. I don't know what I would have done. To be honest, I would have been like, fuck, I don't know. Call my buddy the cop. I don't know. I'm glad I didn't, and I hate to say that, but I'm just glad, because if I did, I don't know how I'd react.
That's where, like, kind of I get stuck. Like, it just doesn't make sense, because there's... A, she 100% had to be there, you know, alive or dead. But B is, if you only stop for 4 minutes and 8 minutes at a gas station, how do you have time to do something like that? And then when you get the twine and the tarp, like, how do you get all that wrapped up and then hit the road and then go to that spot in the wildlife area?
Exactly. Exactly. The only thing I can think of is when maybe I don't know, we've talked about this before. Maybe when he got in an argument with me, that's when he took off. Because his plan was usually to spend the weekend. Me and him were going to go out the next day to dinner. And everything was planned, go horseback riding, all that. So it was kind of weird. It was kind of weird for me. And I'm thinking, okay. And it was an argument, but, it was something like, okay, son, but I didn't want to, I'm like, okay, you're 33 years old. I'm not going to tell you, beg you to stay. If he got upset with me and that was when he did what he did, but I don't know. See, that's the thing in the city. I never wanted the detail.
But here's the thing that doesn't make sense. So let's just say that somehow he did this in the car. I don't know how. Let's just say that happened in the car.
Yeah.
But then how would he not have blood on him when he came in your house?
Exactly. When he came in the house, I hate to say this, I don't even know what he was wearing. I think he was wearing sweats or shorts or something. Just some casual shit. And he had his little bag and he brought it in. And then he put it right here. And I said, go put it in the room. He put it in the room.
One thing I've been waiting to ask is whether his fiancée, who he lives with, was home that night or if he had her leave. To me, that would suggest some sort of premeditation.
No, she was not there. She was over her mom's, thank God. The only reason was she was over her mom's was because she wanted me to spend time with Christopher, because Christopher never told me he was bringing Shadea. I thought he was coming by himself. He had a backpack and a bag, and he just came to my house. He goes, hold on, Dad, let me go out to the truck, get the other bag. He did, come in. I had some wine, and I was drinking some wine, and we were talking, and it's no big deal. It was like nothing happened, nothing. I had no clue. He didn't say nothing to me until like 11:30 that night. I was like, holy shit. He just told me, he said they got in a fight and got in an argument, and she was hitting him, and he ended up choking her, killed her. That's what he said. And in my head, I couldn't comprehend that. I was like, there's no fucking way. There's no way he did this. I'm thinking, there's no fucking way.
What Chris Morez is apparently saying is that on February 23rd, when Chris Botts first came to visit him, his son confessed to murdering Adea. And Chris Morez thought he was joking.
He told me later that night, about 11:30, 12, he had told me that. And that's when we started getting an argument, and he's like, you're out of your mind, I can't believe. I'm like, I didn't believe him, at first, and he just said, Dad, I did, and I'm like, you're fucking not, you're just, what are you doing this, you're fucking lying, there's no way in hell you would do this, and I said, it's the movie you're going to be playing, because he had told me he was going to do a bad cop scene in at Netflix, so I'm thinking, oh, this is not real, this is not, you're full of shit, and he's like, no, Dad, and then he threw that, oh, you weren't there for me when I was a kid, and I said, okay, son, I'm here for you, so what's going on?
While Chris Morez is admitting to more than he has in the past, there's still clearly a lot that he's hiding. But whatever the case may be, one thing is now certain, that on February 23rd, the night Adea Shabani went missing, he knew what happened. And if he thought it was a joke, then a few days later when the news broke that she was missing, he knew by then it was real. This whole time afterward, when he was pretending to be helpful with me, with Jaden, with the police, with Adea's suffering family, he knew exactly what happened and where she was, and he said nothing. Not until his son was dead, and I'm guessing it was safe for him to come forward because there was no one around to contradict him.
I was just happy that they found her closure for the mom, the family. That was the most important thing. And the thing is, sad part is my son, for whatever reason, he did what he did. And I strongly believe this. I mean, I think he just felt so guilty that he felt that he taken his eyes. He was telling James, a lawyer, I'm going to go out like a lawyer. I think he went out because he felt like he was so guilty. He was so what he did. And it's just a sad, sad story. I always wanted to grow up to have kids and, try to be a grandpa, and that'll never happen.
Chapter 32, Chris Spots. When reporting, you have to knock on a lot of doors, but sometimes you just happen to stumble across the right door. This particular one was in Yuba City, about 20 minutes from Wheatland. Led there by an anonymous tip from a listener of this podcast, Jaden and I knocked on the door. A bald, stocky man answered, and his first words were, "I was wondering when you guys would come. I figured the LAPD or a detective would eventually be here."
"I've been saying since all this started, I can't believe nobody's come and talked to her."
"Yeah?"
"I couldn't believe it. I've been saying, I can't believe nobody's talked to her yet."
"Yep."
"Because I was waiting for it."
He then called his fiancée and told her, "There's a private investigator here to see you." Her response, "Is it about Chris Merez?" The man invited us in, and we sat on the couch as a fish tank bubbled in the background. After 10 minutes, his fiancée arrived, along with a daughter she had with Chris Merez.
"Well, I still talk to my sister-in-law every once in a while. Like, I'll have text messages and she'll talk about Chris, and I can't believe, like, you know, like, nothing happened to him. And, you know, I'm like, I know. I mean, he's gotten away with so much stuff. It's not even funny."
"So one question as far as these go, is it okay to share these recordings with the LAPD?"
"Yeah."
"Okay, great. And is it okay to use these on the..." "Mm-hmm." "Okay, you're comfortable with that?"
"Yeah."
"Okay, just want to make sure." The woman you hear speaking is Kim Merez, Chris Merez's ex-wife. She was with him for almost 25 years.
"Whatever you feel comfortable sharing, and obviously we want to get..." "So you said he visited you?"
"Oh, he does. He confides in me. He always confides in me. I mean, I don't know why, but he does, probably because we were together for so long, 20-something years. So, yeah, he always tells me things that I wish, you know, things I probably didn't want to know, but..."
"Obviously, we're interested in that. I mean, we're interested in what he talked about and whatever background you want to discuss. I mean, what happened?" "And we'll say Chris for Chris Merez.
Yeah, Christopher. Yeah. His daughter had a performance, and as we were leaving that night from the performance, he told, you know, go to the car, you know, your mom and I are going to talk."
By he, she's referring to Chris Merez.
"And so then he was telling me about exactly what happened to her, that Christopher had planned to kill her. And I guess he was saying that it was Sam, which is Chris's brother, that he had died and that they were coming up here for the funeral. And I guess they were traveling up here to go to the funeral or whatever to stay with Chris. Chris said that, I guess, Christopher and his girlfriend would sometimes go and sit on the bed of the truck and look at the stars and stuff. So when they were driving up here, Chris goes, I don't know where it happened, but supposedly they were at the bed of the truck and looking at the stars, and he had pulled, I believe it was a shovel, and hit her in the back of the head. So that's what he told me. So it's hard to, you know, that he has this information and then apparently talked to her family and knew where she was and didn't say anything. And that's just, it kills me. It's like, you have a daughter. How could you do that? And I guess he couldn't because that was his son. So, I don't know."
"What did he say happened after that?"
"First, he had a couple stories. I think the last story was Christopher came to the house, Chris's house, and they were talking. He said he was acting kind of weird, just kind of odd, like he wasn't acting himself. He's like, what's wrong with you? And he's like, nothing. And then I guess at some point he told you, he goes, well, I killed her. And he's like, no, you didn't. You're kidding around. He goes, no, I killed her. She's in the back of my truck. Christopher wanted Chris to help him bury her. And Chris told me, he's like, no way, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to get involved. And Christopher played that, you were never in my life. You never did anything for me. Could at least do this for me since you've never been there for me. And apparently, Chris, in his own truck, had Christopher follow him to a place where she was buried. But he told me there was blood in the back of the truck. He told me that she was rolled up. I don't remember what he said, but she was rolled up in. But he said he saw Christopher take her out of the truck and roll her into the hole that he had dug. He saw that. I know he was the only one with Christopher there because his girlfriend had gone. His girlfriend wasn't there that night.
Did he say that when you talk about going down to that location, did he talk about helping him to dig the hole?
He said he didn't. He said, I never touched her. I never dug the hole. He goes, I didn't do any. I didn't participate at all. He goes, I didn't do any of that.
Do you believe him?
Oh, yeah. Right after Christopher killed himself, you know, yeah, Chris is crying to me, saying he's going to go to jail, he's going to go to prison, all this stuff, you know. But he never came clean with seeing Christopher bury her, all that. And I guess her brother had called Chris. I guess it was her birthday, and if you know, and he was like, bought her a birthday cake. We don't know where she's at. If you know anything, and that's what kills me is Chris is like, nope, I don't. And he knew. You know, how could you know where she was at and not say anything? I don't understand. I mean, to me, it's like, why would you like go in separate cars? You went in separate trucks, and Christopher followed you all the way to a place where you chose to bury her, and then you just stood there. Like, it's kind of hard for me to believe that he would have just not have done anything. I mean, as far as like him, like helping him commit the crime, I don't know. He's pretty crazy, but I don't know if I could see him doing it. I don't think I can.
Why? He's just...
I don't know. He was really bad when he was on steroids, really bad. Like, he put a gun to my head, pulled the trigger, all kinds of stuff. I just don't know if I could see him. I don't know.
Did he ever talk to you about motive, like,
yeah.
Why?
Yeah, he told me because he had his fiance and that he tried to break it off with his girlfriend, Christopher did. And she was just like not having it, and she told him, you know, I'm gonna ruin your career, I'm gonna ruin your life, and that's why you did it. And then Chris always told me that Christopher always said that his girlfriend reminded him of his mom and he couldn't stand his mom, which I doubt that. I mean, even the girls at work still, what, every once in a while, hey, what's going on with Chris? Have they arrested him yet? You know, that's why the girls that I work with, because yeah. Everybody was shocked that nothing happened. He does get away with a lot.
Did he say why he led the police to Adea, or why he gave that information?
Yeah, because Christopher had already died. So I guess now it was like an okay time.
You mentioned one other thing, like, and I just want to go back there real quick. You said something about being in the back of the truck looking at the stars. Was that a Chris thing or a Christopher thing?
Definitely not a Chris thing. I don't know if it's a Christopher thing, but...
Okay, but yeah. When he talked about that, he said what? That was something that...
Yeah, he said that's Christopher. We used to do that once in a while. He said, he's to this day still says, I don't know where they stopped, like how close they were to Wheatland, or because I don't know where they went to, where they pulled in and stopped and to look at the stars. He goes, I don't know.
I'll just say this, what do we know about Sam? Anything he may know?
I know that Christopher was talking to Sam after he murdered her. I know that, but he's hush about it. And I think he talked to Sam like days before he killed himself.
Did they talk regularly before that?
I don't think all the time.
From,
I think everyone...
From
no,
what we were
no,
saying,
they
it wasn't
didn't.
Very often.
No, they didn't. I think it was like...
Yeah.
Kind of like what Chris did, you know, needed someone to talk to and spill his guts about things that he's done, maybe. I don't know.
What's Chris Morris and Sam Morris's relationship?
As brothers.
Are they brothers who trust each other, distrust each other?
Distrust. They don't talk to each other. They don't talk at all. Like, Chris is kind of... doesn't really talk a lot to his family. Like, I talk to his nieces and, you know, like, I talk to them, but he's kind of like, I think of all the lies and everything, I think there everybody's kind of like stays away now. So do they still have the cases that actually still open?
No.
They closed it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No. That's it.
Yeah. I understand. I get why. I mean, I work local for the sheriff's department for a long time. The goal was to close cases. So, you know, as fast as you can close them with a good closure, that's what you do. You know, it's...
doesn't give the family complete closure.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And it's... but it's a reality based on budgets and caseloads and, you know, that's how it goes. But I don't think it's closed. I mean, I don't think so.
It's 3 days later, and I'm looking at a property receipt given to Mary by the police. It contains the items they took from Chris Botts' truck. It includes one baton, which was the metal baton that Chris Botts had bought for his role as a police officer in the web series The Shokes. It contains papers, which we believe to be the letter that Chris Botts was writing Mary. There's a hat, two pairs of boots, at least 100 rounds of live ammunition, a gun magazine, a key, and a receipt from Anawalt Lumber dated February 23rd, 2018. And the frustrating thing is after months of back and forth, my Anawalt Lumber contact never came through with a cash receipt. Fortunately, Jaden comes through and sends me there to pick it up.
Yeah, man.
Okay, so I just went to Anawalt Lumber. I went to the back office. The guy handed me the receipt, and you're not gonna believe this.
Did you look at the actual items?
Yeah, I looked at the SKU numbers, and I went and picked up each one. I got them spread out right in front of me right now.
Oh, you bought the items?
I bought the items.
Amazing, okay.
So I'm looking at them right now. He gets a pair of suede gloves, a flashlight,
okay,
a big moisture-absorbing towel, and a shovel.
Chapter 33, the final chapter. Three persons of interest.
Hey, Alex, I'll take it.
Yeah, we can sit in here.
We've got all this information. We've done all these interviews. It's been 14 months?
Yeah.
Almost. And really in this last, like, week, just a flood of information came in.
I'm in Jaden's office, and we're preparing our final report for Adea's mother, Nora, as well as for Chris's fiancée, Mary, and his mother, Jade. It's the first time that we've sat together formally and just attempted to put together all the information we've collected. Our investigation has led us to three persons of interest. Person of interest one, Sam Morez.
When were the calls to Sam? 10:26, 10:47.
And then I think a text at
11:27.
They're all 1 minute calls. They easily could have just...
not connected. Hey, call me back ASAP.
There are two pieces of information that led us to Samarez. The first is the phone calls that Chris Potts was desperately making to Sam's 424 number on the night of Adea's murder. Though I still have plans to meet with Sam in person, after getting to know him better, it felt like the time was now right to ask him about that night. Why do you think he was desperately trying to reach you that night? Because you're the only one he was calling.
I wouldn't even know. Like I said, I hadn't talked to him only once before that, and that was in 2015 when he was living in L.A. To tell you truthfully, he never mentioned anything, never told me anything, and if he would have, at that moment, I would have told him to turn himself in.
Sam goes on to tell me that it's unlikely that Chris Potts had his 424 number, so he probably got it from Chris Merez. And since Sam says he didn't answer any of the calls, his best guess is that Chris Potts was calling for advice, for help, or most likely, for somewhere to stay in the area since he probably did have some sort of argument with his father that night. The second piece of information that led us to Sam Merez is Chris Potts' claim that Sam and Chris Merez were co-conspirators in Adea's murder and burial. And aside from the fact that we now know Chris Potts told a lot of lies, the other problem with his accusation is that Sam Merez doesn't trust his brother enough to get involved in something like this with him.
I've never had a close relationship with my brother and talked to my brother much. Fortunately, my brother, I don't even know of anybody in my family who speaks to my brother. My sister hasn't spoken to him. My uncle's aunts, I've had uncles walking away.
I've spoken extensively with several people who know both Sam and Chris Merez, and they've confirmed what Sam is saying. So I feel confident in concluding that Chris Potts' allegations about Sam were completely fabricated and an act of fear and desperation. Person of interest two, Chris Merez.
The next thing is, he's keeping the affair secret from Mary, from his mom. I've talked to a few of his friends now, from most of his friends till the very end, except for one person he knows won't disapprove of what he's doing.
That's Merez?
Right.
This is Jade Spots discussing a conversation with one of the LAPD detectives investigating the case.
She said, I cannot reveal to you my information, but she said, I know you think that Chris Merez was involved, but I can tell you we are 100% sure that he had no contact with Chris Merez. In fact, their contact over the last 3 years was very limited and next to none.
But there's a problem with what the detective is telling Jade. I have Chris Potts' phone bill. And in November, he has 4 calls with his biological father. In December, there are 3 calls. But in the 19 days leading up to Adea's murder in February, there are 41 calls between Chris Potts and Chris Merez. For a total of 251 minutes. And in the last 3 days before Adea disappears, there are 14 calls back and forth between them. And this is where our suspicions about Chris Merez's involvement begin. Especially since he later admitted to us that he knew about the murder and concealed it. So let's discuss his statements to his ex-wife, Kim. We don't know for a fact that what he told her is true. He's lied to us many times. But the lies have always been to protect himself. And his story to Kim lines up with the data we have, specifically the Google information and the Anawalt lumber receipt, data that neither Chris Merez nor Kim Merez have. So it feels safe to say that Chris Merez's confession is the minimum of his involvement in Adea's disappearance. Where the line of demarcation between what he did and what his son did can be drawn is something we'd still like to determine, as well as whether they planned this together. But one thing we do feel certain about is that Chris Merez led his son to the Spenceville Wildlife Area campground where Adea was buried. For one thing, Chris Merez told us that his son knew the Spenceville Wildlife Area because he'd gone hiking there with Brian. But here's what Brian had to say about that when I asked him afterward. And just to make sure, I had him look it up on Google Maps. We've disguised his voice here.
Spenceville Wildlife Area.
Yeah, no, man. Never once been hiking there, so.
And you've never heard of a place called Hidden Falls or anything?
Uh-uh.
However, when I spoke with Chris Merez's fiancée, she said that she and Chris Merez had gone horseback riding in that very spot several times. After our meeting with Kim, she called back with one other fact that she forgot to mention.
Chris said that he had held the flashlight while he was there, while he buried her.
Whether Chris Merez helped more than this, we may never know. But we do know that he was there that night assisting his son and giving his son money the next day for the ride home. California law defines accessory after the fact as harboring, concealing, or aiding a person whom you know has committed a felony in order to protect him or her from arrest, trial, conviction, and or sentencing. And that's probably why Chris Merez told Kim, as well as his fiance, that he was likely going to jail.
So I remember Chris and I like sat down and he goes, I don't know what's gonna happen, but I just wanna let you know that if something happens, he goes, it won't. But because the cops always kept giving him like 50-50, right? You never know. And he just said, you know, whatever happens, you'll be taken care of.
Person of interest 3, Chris Spotts.
So what we want to say is we know they drove up there. We know they stopped two places based on the accuracy of the timeline. We know nothing happened to her prior to that. So when we went up there, and I've looked at it again and thought about it, I mean, that road really is, it's a good spot.
To what likelihood is it that it happened in that driveway versus when they're at Chris Merez's house for you?
I don't know. I mean, 80-20 driveway. Because so far, Kim's information has either kind of been corroborated with something else or been corroborated with some kind of evidence. Like her stories just sort of fit into the narrative. The fact that there was both the blunt force trauma and lacerations, just on a 30,000 foot view, would say, well, that makes sense with a shovel because you're actually dealing with a blunt object and a sort of a bladed object.
I show today's autopsy report to an independent forensic pathologist, Dr. Judy Melanick, who stated that nothing in it was inconsistent with Kim's story.
So you've got at least 8 different impacts to the head, possibly more, with crushing injury to the underlying bone. So that would be consistent with a heavy, hard implement like a shovel.
Your thoughts on the drive back? Because I don't think we ever said it explicitly now that we know all this other information.
I feel like he's definitely getting rid of discarding her stuff. I mean, the Google timeline tracks him to dumpsters and stuff in parking lots, right? I mean, so he's definitely getting rid of her stuff piece by piece.
The only thing left is this last chase, the pursuit with the police. And I think we haven't discussed that you got Chris Spotts' autopsy report. I share that autopsy report with a forensic investigator. I have his notes.
The report we commissioned from an independent forensic investigator stated, Mr. Spotts discharged a single 9mm shot. This shot occurred prior to the 3 less lethal shots fired by CHP officers from outside the vehicle into the driver's door window. Assuming no other individual was in the vehicle cab at the time of the 9mm discharge, Mr. Spotts did commit suicide using a 9mm pistol. I would so testify the aforementioned findings and opinions under penalty of perjury.
My problem with his, like, activities after the fact has always been, how did he think that it was a better idea to not cooperate with the police, get a lawyer, start staying in hotels? How did he think that was a better idea than just...
If Chris Spotts came home, went about his normal life, what would happen, given all the evidence we have?
I think as long as Chris Merez kept his mouth shut, probably a bunch of nothing. He would have probably held. He would have had to hold up under some scrutiny, but it would have been Chris Merez, and it would have been if that body resurfaced. He could have come up with a way better plan. That was a really terrible plan.
Epilogue. Based on a 14-month investigation, including extensive interviews with all the surviving individuals known to be involved in the case, it's our determination that Chris Botts planned and carried out the murder of Adeya Shabani, with at the very least, help after the fact from his father, Chris Merez. Jaden reaches out to Adeya's mother, Nora, to share her findings and the new information about what happened to her daughter. And I share our conclusions with Mary, Jade Spots, and Jack Spots.
So yesterday morning, before you told me any of this, before I knew any of this, I like was literally getting ready for church, and this overwhelming like feeling and thought was just like came through across my head and heart. It was just like, it's time to let him go. It's time to let him be at peace.
As for Nora, she's now looking into ways to keep Adeya's memory alive.
I would like to do something now. I'm entertaining that idea. I think because she loved so much music, now the research shows that music can help a lot in children who are cognitively affected by some kind of trauma. And now evidence is emerging that music can heal these children.
I also speak with Chris Merez and share our theory of what happened with him. He doesn't deny it. In fact, he often appears to agree and say exactly. Yet still, he returns to the same stories he's told earlier, as if he hasn't heard what I've just said.
Yeah. Where would I go to drop off a package for Detective Bill Hayes?
Okay, you have a contact number?
Right now, I'm dropping off this episode and all the original source material for it, including the Google data and the Kim Merez interview, at the LAPD. Hopefully, this is not the end.
I'm next in line, and my supply is running out. It's time to leave the clouds are hanging low. The truth begins to show.
Just as this episode was coming out, Jaden called to say a potentially groundbreaking tip had just come in. One that he wants to investigate further before sharing even with me. If needed, we will continue this in a bonus episode. If you're listening to this and you're in a physically or emotionally abusive relationship, the National Domestic Violence Hotline can help victims and survivors of domestic violence. Call 1-800-799-7233. Many of you have written us with questions about the case. We will answer those as well as share further information in a special bonus episode. If you have any other questions, theories, or tips about this case, please write us at livediela@tenderfoot.tv or call our voicemail line at 213-204-2073 or even email us a recording of your thoughts. Make sure to let us know if it's okay to use your voice on the podcast. Though you've heard my voice in all these episodes, producers Donald Albright and Alex Vespestad worked just as many hours over the last year on this and deserve special acknowledgement. To Live and Die in LA has been a production of Tenderfoot TV and myself in conjunction with Cadence 13. The executive producers of this podcast are myself, Donald Albright, and Payne Lindsay, along with producers Alex Vespestad and Mike Root. The music and score is by Makeup and Vanity Set. The theme song, which you finally got to hear more of, is Love and War by Flurry. Our show art and design are by Trevor Eiler. The editing is by Alex Vespestad, with additional mixing by Resonate Recordings. Special thanks to Oren Siegel, Brian Fishback, Charlene Lee, Julian Chan, Ingrid De La O, Carla Velarde, Rich Berner, Kevin Richter, Chris Corcoran, Oren Rosenbaum at UTA, The Nord Group, Eric at Shangri-La, Concord Music, Cobalt Music, Beck Media and Marketing, Station 16, and the teams at Tenderfoot TV and Cadence 13. One final note. We're planning a live event in LA very soon. We've learned so much from Adea's case that we've been able to help another family. This family's son went missing late last year, and they haven't had the support they need, both from the authorities and from the media. Information about the date, time, and tickets, which will help support the family's GoFundMe, will be posted to my social media accounts, at Neil Strauss, as soon as possible. Thank you for listening, for commenting, for calling in tips, for making all this possible, and for remembering Adea as she was. And Adea, there are no words. You didn't deserve this, and no one does. We'll be making a significant donation to the Children's Music Fund in your name.
Why, hello there. Welcome to Radio Rental. If you're new around here and haven't heard, I'm your host, Terry Carnation. On Radio Rental, we play tapes of the scariest true stories you've ever heard. That's right, we've got real scary stories told by the people that actually experienced them. We've got stories of paranormal peril, near-death experiences, stitches in the space-time continuum, and more. Stories like these.
This person was looking for me. They start to take these long strides towards me. I was freaking out.
We started seeing it everywhere we went. It would be sitting there watching us.
I've never ran so fast in my life.
And it's all set right here at Radio Rental, the video rental shop of your worst nightmares. Radio Rental is available now. Listen 1 week early and ad-free on Tenderfoot Plus.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.